This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. And I have been using BetterHelp for so many years. I couldn't recommend it more. A lot of us are spending our lives wishing we had more time. And I feel like it's so easy to get stressed out and not know how to prioritize or just even take a second to breathe in order to look at your life. And so it is really helpful to have therapy. I use BetterHelp to just manage my everyday life, big things, small things. I go back to childhood trauma, but then I also handle like everyday stress with my therapist.
And I think sometimes with feeling like there's no time for things in your life, dedicating some time to therapy can feel like another big thing. But BetterHelp makes it so accessible. It is entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should really give BetterHelp a try.
Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/TGOG today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TGOG.
Very spooky.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing? Oh, God. Why am I like this? This is Two Girls, One Ghost.
Two Girls, One Ghost. Yesterday, we recorded an episode, which actually comes out after this episode, but my bathroom door was experiencing some strange things. So I have left hauntings. It open today.
Okay.
So that it doesn't startle us during our recording, should a spirit decide to open it.
We both have a lot of random stuff going on.
Yeah, you still have construction.
Does anybody else experience feelings and whatnot, like when they come into your apartment? I know that you don't feel scared and it doesn't feel like there's anything bad.
I don't think so. No, there's a different house in our little like courtyard that people get bad feelings from. And I think I told you about that. We all after a courtyard dinner, like ran over there.
The person doesn't even really live there for very long. Mm-hmm. Also, we're recording so many episodes. I have a ton of construction going on. There's probably going to be some background noise. So if you guys hear that, not a ghost.
We could just like feed into it and just say it's a bunch of ghosts.
Yeah, I just have a barrage of squirrel ghosts upstairs.
Although I am curious, with all this construction, will the ghosts act up?
I have been curious about that. I mean, that was kind of one of my theories with the metal rack being, I guess I don't know where we are because we're recording all out of order. We're recording so many different things. But there was an episode that's either coming out after this or maybe it just came out. I don't know. But I had why can't I never remember the name of it? A curtain rod that was two separate curtain rods right next to each other. Then on opposite ends, the metal was like ripped out of the wall and bent down. And I was like, Jesus Christ, are the ghosts mad? Because it was the morning the construction was about to begin.
Wait, I dreamt about you again.
What was it?
So, you know what actually triggered this memory is I was just looking at you talking and I had heard that story before. So I was kind of just like just staring at you and like
not paying attention.
Well, no, but I was looking at you and I was like, wow, she's so beautiful. And I was just thinking about how stunning you are.
Odd thing to say.
Well, no. And then it reminded me of my dream. And I'm curious if you're going to notice this. If you start going out to places, my dream was people are just staring at you because they're in awe of your beauty.
That happened in your dream?
Yeah. And like you went to sit in you basically were in multiple places and people just like kept looking at you. And then like multiple people would be like, you're glowing. You're so beautiful. Talking to you about your pregnancy. And then there was like, you were sitting at dinner with Brian and this older lady was sliding into the booth, but she kept like, she went so slowly so she could stare at you the whole time because she thought you were so pretty.
I feel like that's never happened to me. So I'm curious if it does.
Well, I also feel like you don't go out often.
Yeah, and I'm less likely to leave at night these days. I love a good breakfast or lunch. You know, it's interesting that you say this because there was one specific day, not about me, but when I was with my cousin Lainey. And I don't even remember where we were, if we were like in LA or Spain or Boston, Portsmouth, we've been all over together. Mm-hmm. But there was one specific day a few years ago where every single person that we passed for like the 10 hours we were out and about whipped their heads around to stare at Lainey. And we're like, who do they think you are? Why does this entire area that we're in, like the population that's out today, thinks you must look like someone, right?
Or there was just like an energy that she was giving off that day that people just like.
There had to have been. Because she kept asking me, she's like, you're sure there's nothing like on my face? There's nothing weird. Like we were both noticing. We were walking together. No one's looking at me. Everyone's whipping their heads looking at Lainey. And Lainey's like, what the fuck is wrong with everyone? So yeah, maybe there is some weird energy that will be put off. I'm not sure. I'll let you know if that's a premonition that comes true.
Or maybe it was just me being like, I need to tell Corinne that she's beautiful because I think she's beautiful and I want to remind her.
Well, thanks. I feel like everyone is always like, oh, with pregnancy, people are always so like they're glowing. And I feel like every other day has been such a like distinct difference where some days I'm like, oh, I like the way I look. And other days I'm like, I am the puffiest person I've ever been. And I look like I haven't slept in 40 days.
I've never noticed that about you. I
really
will say, I think you
look. My left eye like just perpetually waters now too.
Okay, well, my left eye perpetually twitches. So maybe that's why yours is watering.
Maybe we're connected. Just we're tied together through our left eyeballs. If we become a powerful coven of witches or duo of witches, if anyone wants to stop us, they have to remove our left eyeballs.
Oh, that's where our power
that's
lies.
That's our silver stake.
We just told them our secret.
Don't take my eyeball, please. I need it. I would pass out. I'd probably die from fear.
You would if they went for your eyeball.
Wait, did we say that this is Two Girls, One Ghost yet?
Yeah, we did. But I don't think I said who we are. So that's Corinne and I'm Sabrina. And my mom yesterday just sent me a firefighter teaches you how to get out of handcuffs. And I was like, thanks, Mom. I really could have used this last week.
Excuse me? Come again? Oh, Jesus Christ. I was like, I don't know if this is a thing that you just haven't shared with me about a potential arrest or if this is about to be a sexy tea time.
I've been held captive for months. No, she just sent it to me, and I feel like your mom, you and your mom send each other, like, safety things all the time. My mom sends the most random things ever and doesn't give any context, really. So
yeah, was she in this situation, and was she had...
No, she just was on Facebook.
Here's the question. Did she send it to your siblings as well, or does she think you're the one most likely to end up in handcuffs?
No, she sent it to all of us.
Okay, well, there we go. That's better. That's better. That would have been so much worse.
That's a very good clarifying question. I think a couple years ago, it would have been more likely my sister would end up, like, not necessarily in handcuffs, but in a situation, like, in a dangerous situation. But I think I've taken that role on. And someone had to, ever since my sister started having a family. Like, someone had to step up.
I feel like you guys are just, your level of risk-taking and idea of safety can be different from other people's. Everyone has a different threshold. And I think you guys as a duo, especially after me being the paranoid person I am, witnessing the two of you guys together in New Orleans, I will say I think you guys feed off of each other and are down for anything.
Oh, when we're together. Yeah.
Yes.
But growing up, it was very much like I was way more tame. Even now, like my sister, I feel like when I was back as a mom, I'm sure she like is so excited for like nights out, but she turns up more than I do. I like wasn't drinking and she was. Yeah. Just depends on my mood. Sometimes I'm freaky. Sometimes I'm sleepy.
It's the duality of man.
Freaky or sleepy?
Are you freaky or sleepy?
Okay, well, I have a freaky ass episode. And
okay.
I don't know what I thought I was getting myself into, but it is not what I'm about to share with you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have no idea. So the listener's story that I picked at the end, like I have no idea now if this is going to be...
If it connects.
Be right, given that you're like, this is different than I thought it was?
Well, okay.
I'm intrigued.
So, a little bit of context. I was introduced to Mothman Prophecies with Richard Gere and Laura Linney. This was like a month ago. And it's based on a book written by John Keel, which I think you have talked about him a little bit when you did cover Mothman back in episode 83.
Probably.
So, this man wrote this book all about the Mothman prophecies. And in the movie, there's this mention of this name. And I was like, who dat? So that sent me like on a whole spiral.
I Googled the name real quick and it was like all connected to Mothman. And so I was like, oh, it's got to be Mothman adjacent. Mm-hmm. Buckle up, everyone. We're going on a ride. Okay.
Wow. Okay. I love when you take us into kind of conspiracy land too, because I feel like out of the two of us, you're almost the least likely to have a little wackadoodle moment.
Listen, I read an entire, like, this could have been a forever episode. It could be a whole season of a podcast because the conspiracies on this are insane. I read an entire book, and at the end, they posit this conspiracy that I was like, what the heck? Where did this come from? That I couldn't even, we'll get there.
Wait, but, so this isn't even all of like the whole show, The Mothman Prophecies. This is just a one small piece that they mentioned that has all of this.
Oh, it's a whole other thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Okay, wait, what's the book called? I want to read it.
I highly recommend it. The book will be in the show notes, but I'm going to tell you about the book. I don't want to say what it is yet because it gives away some story. So I'm just going to start from the very beginning. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to set the stage. It is 1966. And in 1966, there was a really strange phenomenon happening in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. It is one that you covered on episode 83. People all over town were reporting sightings of a large, man-sized bird creature. And these sightings increased over the coming months and seemed to prophesy something horrible or something terrible coming. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into those specific sightings because it's not even about this. But basically, all of these events and sightings were caused. And by December of 1967, people started to theorize upon this man bird creature. Who or what was it? Was it warning people in Point Pleasant? Who was this moth man, as they were calling it?
With the big booty and the rock hard abs.
Mm-hmm.
Who is he?
Who is he? Well, American journalist John Keel sought to find answers. And so around the same time, so 1966, John Keel, who had spent, I mean, this man has lived many lives. He was always fascinated by the magical, the surreal, the unknown. He spent years traveling the world. He served in the army. He worked at radio stations, wrote for television, even tried to track the Yeti. He spent a lot of time internationally. And in 1966, John Keel was asked by Playboy to write an article about UFOs for their publication.
You know, I've been really relying on IQ Bar because, well, they're plant protein packed bars and they're really quick. They're diet friendly, gluten free for me. What I thought was my personal stash, Brian has been eating them too.
You gotta re-up.
I know.
You too can start each day right with IQ Bar's brain and body boosting bars, their hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all three. You can get 7 IQ Bar flavors, 4 IQ Mix flavors, and 4 IQ Joe flavors. And today, listeners get an exclusive offer of 20% off plus free shipping. Just text TGOG to 64000-64000. And I am a big fan of this sampler pack because it's a great way to try all of their products and then decide what you really like, and then you can re-up what you want. I'm a huge fan of the IQ Joe. It's a jitter-free instant coffee packed with 200 milligrams of natural caffeine, brain-boosting magnesium, and productivity-enhancing lion's mane. And they come in 4 delicious flavors. I prefer the vanilla spice or the cafe mocha because it just tastes so good. I'm so productive, Corinne. Right. I'm like, I'm crushing episodes. I'm researching ghost stories like nobody's
Hell
business.
Hell yeah. So you can refuel smarter with IQ Bar's Ultimate Sampler Pack. That's 7 IQ Bars, 4 IQ Mix Sticks, and 4 IQ Joe Sticks. And now our special podcast listeners get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping. To get your 20% off, just text TGOG to 64000. Get your discount, text TGOG to 64000. That's TGOG to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
So he went out to start investigating UFOs and supernatural events.
Yeah.
In his investigation, he winds up learning about these sightings in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, of this Mothman bird-like creature. And he became so filled with curiosity of these oddities that his article that he wrote for Playboy never got published. But he was like, I'm in this now, and I'm going to continue figuring out what is going on.
Also, I want to know why they didn't get published. Like, was there something in there that just felt like where they thought it was going to be just kind of this entertainment piece, and it just became way more real. And so they were like, actually, we need to pass on this because this doesn't feel right for our magazine. Like, what was the reason?
I didn't find the answer to that question. I don't know. Or maybe his heart wasn't in it because he ended up, I don't know. Or it could just be a simple answer of like Playboy was like, man, this doesn't actually work with us. They have a bunch of editors.
Yeah.
One editor wanted UFOs and the rest were like, let's do sex, please.
Yeah. I feel like that would have been us. It's like, it doesn't matter. Like, oh, you work for a rock climbing magazine? Let's find a way to talk about Bigfoot or aliens. Like, just trying to make our own interests as part of it. Someone else comes in and they're like, this does not match our brand image. You're like, it does, though. It does. People are interested.
There's always a way if you open your heart to it. Okay, so John Keel became obsessed with the Mothman and really wanting to know who he was, what was going on, and investigating these stories. Like, he almost found himself entranced by the Mothman. So he went on to write the Mothman Prophecies, which was turned into the movie that starred Richard Gere. And so, again, this is not about that. This is about someone or something else that while investigating the Mothman, John Keel discovered something or someone connected to the Mothman, something or someone just as mysterious and strange.
Oh.
Indrid Cold.
That sounds like a human.
It does. I'm going to share these encounters with you in the way that John Keel discovered them.
Okay.
I'm just going to give a note up front that these took place before, during, and after Mothman encounters. And John Keel was thrown into the midst of it all. He came in contact with Mothman, Indrid Cold. He also coined the term Men in Black because while investigating both of these things, he was visited multiple times by men in black suits who seemed to be trying to coerce or manipulate his memory and thoughts. He was also told many things and warned of impending doom.
Ugh, the men in black being involved, just like whenever people mention men in black, I just get so much more intrigued because we also just don't understand the men in black's role either. Because it feels like they insert themselves, but then they do so little at the same time. So it's like, what's happening in between the visit and everything else? Like, what are we not seeing? What are we missing here? But it does make it seem like, you know, an alarm bell's raised. Like, whatever you experienced it's something.
Oh, 100%. I almost feel like Men in Black make things even more suspicious than they need to.
Definitely.
Okay, so John Keel, during all of this, narrowly escaped with his life. And not everyone else was as lucky. During all of this investigation, John Keel started communicating with the spirit or the entity that is Indrid Cold. And Indrid Cold warned John Keel that on December 15th, 1967, during the White House Christmas tree lighting, the country would experience a countrywide blackout. On December 15th, 1967, John Keel was in his apartment or in his home in New York City watching the White House Christmas tree lighting. And just as the tree was lit, the broadcast was interrupted. There was a tragedy that occurred. It was not a countrywide blackout, but a bridge had suddenly collapsed in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Point Pleasant, West Virginia, of all places, was the place where all of these Mothman sightings had been occurring for over 12 to 13 months.
Jeez. Yeah. Oh, it's so weird, too, because it's like, you almost want it to be a countrywide blackout so that they take him and what he's saying a little bit more seriously, but it didn't perfectly match. So I'm like,
yeah,
I don't know what his involvement is going to be.
Right.
Or the trust of the government in him.
Well, this is where it gets so complicated because, and I don't know that I will ever give you the answer because I don't know all the connections, but like Indrid Cold seemed to like want to communicate on behalf of Mothman, but they aren't speaking the same language, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
It was like a translation that was maybe miscommunicated. But anyway.
Right.
The Silver Bridge, which connected Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and Gallipolis, Ohio, collapsed amid heavy rush hour traffic, unfortunately taking the lives of 46 people. There are some photos that we can show of the bridge collapse. There's no like gory images or anything. It's just the bridge broken. So now that we understand how the Mothman sightings culminated in tragedy, not for the last time, I'd like to know, but this is not an episode about Mothman, I want to share with you the stories of Indrid Cold, and we can discuss, speculate, and theorize who the heck he is and what his connection to Mothman is.
Okay, I'm ready.
As John Keel was doing this investigation, he put together some encounters with Indrid Cold. I want to clarify that these are the main three encounters that are considered connected to Indrid Cold. There are many, many more. There are so many that you can find online. There are a lot of like Reddit forums that people are like, oh, I experienced an encounter with Indrid Cold. But these are the three that John Keel heard about, spoke to people about, and investigated while learning about Mothman, and okay, somehow found connections between them and was like, this is something else.
What a cool role to have. Just like piecing all of this stuff together.
I imagine it was a very fun, but also probably a bit scary job to do, because you're knocking on doors of people you don't know, right, and you're trying to investigate these stories.
It can be dangerous, and some people are. I feel like we've been so lucky in that our community just feels like a community that's excited to just be together and be able to like discuss these things. But we have heard from other people that are also in kind of like the ghost and paranormal world, that it does lead to a lot of strange encounters with humans, almost more so than with the paranormal.
Exactly. So, I think humans can be scarier than the paranormal.
Yeah.
And this episode might prove that again. Okay, so the first encounter predates the first Mothman encounter. It was actually October 16th, 1966. Martin Munov and James Yanitis were walking through their hometown of Elizabeth, New Jersey. And if anyone's flown into Newark Airport, this is where, like, Elizabeth, that's the town. So it's very industrial. It's adjacent to Jersey City and, like, right across the water from Manhattan. So it's very close. So Martin and James were walking down the street, and apparently they were walking very adjacent to the NJ Turnpike. So there was, like, an on and off ramp right there. So it's kind of, like, a busy area, but it's also not a heavy pedestrian area. They were walking on October 16th, 1966 to go play pinball, apparently.
Ooh, fun.
You know, normal day for them. Nothing strange. It's a regular route for the boys. They're like, hey, we could walk this blindfolded. We know it so well. But something odd happened. Something that they couldn't really describe, but it was more of a feeling where everything shifted. Both of them noticed that there was like a, almost like you feel like someone has eyes on you. Or no, worse, where you feel like you're being hunted. You realize you are the prey in the situation.
Oh, that sends a chill down my spine, Sabrina, just like feeling like that. Because I have felt like that too.
Right?
Yeah. And it's worse when it's like, even when you're with someone, when it feels like you're alone on the street. Yeah.
Remember that one time I texted you and I was like, I swear I just walked past a serial killer or a sociopath? The energy I got from him was horrifying.
I do remember that. So scary.
Santa Monica, watch out. It's me. I'm the one who has negative energy. No.
Not right now.
I understand why my mother's worried about me.
Inner monologue coming out.
It happens sometimes. Okay, so they have this feeling and they both feel it immediately. And that is when they notice on the other side of a fence that is like impossible for a human to have gotten on because it's like on the side of like the turnpike, they see a man standing there, staring at them, grinning at them.
No thanks. Keep your smile to yourself.
And it is a smile that does not reach his eyes. It is a way too wide, inhuman grin.
Ew, I hate that. Just dead on top of being like, this is what I'm supposed to do to make them feel comfortable and approachable. Just, I can't even like, I feel like I'm struggling to even do it.
It's hard.
You're doing it well.
Thank you.
Look at you go. You're so good.
You're so good at being creepy. Congratulations. So this smile does not reach his eyes. The boys note that his eyes were in fact these beady, soulless little eyes that were too far apart from one another. They were horrified. And as they're simultaneously experiencing this fear and horror, they are like, we know something is wrong. And it was really hard for them in the moment to really process what's happening, right? their instincts are telling them to run. They're trying to process what's before them. They're really focused on this smile. But there are a couple other things that they do notice about this man. They notice his stature was large, around 6 feet tall, and he was wearing a strange jumpsuit that was reflective and tinted green. And he was wearing a black belt, but they kept going back to that grin.
What an outfit.
I know.
This feels like something that would have been in the movie Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century. You know,
right?
Shiny. Like one of the outfits worn on the ship,
like
got the belt,
some, like, leather, shiny leather, yeah. Pleather, green pleather,
ready to go to the concert at the space station.
This man was accessorized well, but so all of this processing took seconds because they were like, "No, we are not staying here any longer," and they took off running for safety. And apparently, the grinning man ran after them. But there are various stories, like when you look at the internet. Some say the man ran, some say he did not because he was on the other side of the fence. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Regardless, right. They got away safely, luckily. And Martin and James reported their sighting to the police. And even when separated, their accounts were identical. And guess what? They were believed because they were not the only two people that day to report strange sightings of a man in a green suit lingering around Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? Can I just say, I'm so glad people are actually reporting this, too, because I feel like there's just so many odd people. And I feel like now kind of like the New York City area has the reputation where, like, you can dress however you want. You can act however you want. Like, there's always those videos that are like, just another day on the New York City subway. And it's like someone pretending to be a rat and another person, like, barking in the window. Like, there's just things that are just accepted and everyone ignores it and you move on. But the fact that this felt so wrong to multiple people that they called it in, and it is probably one of the least bizarre things to actually be happening in that area.
Sure. But it's also so easy for someone to write that off and not think anything of it, right? Like, that goes with most cryptids or paranormal alien type of encounters. Like, a lot of people are like, it's easy to not believe, and a lot of people are written off and tried to be and made to look mad or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to break a bad habit and felt like you're climbing Everest in flip-flops? Yeah, we've been there. It's not enjoyable, but here is a breath of fresh air. Fume. It's not about giving up. It's about switching up. Fume takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that does just that. So instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. And instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors.
Yeah, you get it. Instead of the bad, Fume is the good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy and makes replacing your bad habit easier. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is really helpful when you're trying to de-stress, and it's helpful with anxiety while also simultaneously breaking your bad habit.
Here's my opinion on this. If vapor was compared to sticky soda, which is icky, Fume flavor is compared to herbal tea. So it's a lot more natural and calming. And I feel like they are perfectly balanced. Also, the design of the product is very beautiful.
Yeah, they have an accessory, you guys. Fume just released a magnetic stand for your Fume, so you don't have to worry about losing it around your house or in your bag or anything. Start the year off right with the good habit by going to tryfume.com/TGOG and getting the journey pack today. Fume is giving listeners of the show 10% off when they use our code TGOG to help make starting the good habit that much easier.
So they began calling this man the Grinning Man. And I have a picture. It's basically a fake animated photo of what people imagine the Grinning Man to look like. The really wide, smiled, beady eyes. Kind of a larger head.
Yeah, I've totally seen so many drawings depicting that too. It's creepy every time.
And in his research, John Keel found that actually that very same night, there were multiple low-level UFO sightings in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Wow. So he's putting together these pieces. Like, we're putting together the conspiracy board. You know what? I should turn this wall into a cork board and we should just pin up pictures.
You need to put the bookshelf on wheels so that normal day can be like this. And then when the right people come in or when we're recording, you turn the bookshelf And that's the back of it where it's like, when we get to conspiracy hour.
That's such a good idea.
Flip the board over. We're mapping it out.
I love it so much. We're never going to do it.
Welcome to the podcast. It's a miracle we've been podcasting for almost seven years. So we do this. We're committed to this.
Okay. We have a second encounter now. This second encounter with the grinning man, who we will soon learn of his name, took place not too long after the first one. It was November 2nd, 1966. So less than a month, but this one is now in Parkersburg, West Virginia. Woodrow, aka Woody Derenberger, was a sewing machine salesman living in Mineral Wells, West Virginia. His job required him to travel quite a lot, and so he was no stranger to driving long stretches of road through day, night, all types of weather. He was used to it. But what he encountered on the evening of November 2nd, 1966 was nothing like he had endured or experienced before. It was approximately 7:25 p.m. He was driving his truck down Route I-77 from Marietta, Ohio to his home in Mineral Springs. He was going about 50 miles per hour when all of a sudden he heard like kind of a sound of things falling in the back of his truck. So he turns that light on that's like right overhead and turns to look behind his shoulder. He notices that one of his sewing machines had fallen off of another one and caused the sound. So he doesn't really think much of it, but as he's doing this, he notices another car pull up behind him, turn on its blinker, and go around him. And as this car goes around him, he has like this weird experience where he sees something behind that car that passes him, but it has no light, but it's just a weird object that causes him to do a double take. He's like, what is that? This weird object starts to move around his own vehicle. And it now is in front of his truck. And it's massive. And it starts to slow down to the point where Woody also has to slow down. And he's like, what do I do? Like, honestly, his only instinct right now is like, how do I avoid crashing into this thing, whatever it is? So he pulls over to the side of the road, hoping to like go around on the shoulder or something. But this object stops, blocking the entire highway.
But he can't make out exactly what this object is.
It's dark and it's big. And all of a sudden, a humanoid-like figure emerges from it.
Oh my God. What if this happened to us, Sabrina, when we were doing our drive down the Eastern Seaboard for our tour? Can you imagine?
That would have been kind of cool, though. Instead, we saw baby alligators and signs for lots of strip clubs that people were going to in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
So this man emerged, and I'm going to read a quote from Woody Derenberger's book, which I'm going to touch upon a lot more. It's such a quick read, and I highly recommend it for people if you want to read it. I think you can also listen to it, but it's called Visitors from Lanelos, My Contact with Indrid Cold by Woody Derenberger. So this is a quote. After the man stepped from the object, I noticed it rose off the ground and hovered a distance from 50 to 100 feet above my truck. The object. So it like went up.
Mm-hmm.
Both of my truck's headlights remained on, as did the dome lights inside the cab. This strange man walking in front of my truck, I could see him very plainly in the headlights. He had a pleasant appearance and was about 5 feet 10 or 5 feet 11 inches tall, around 180 pounds. His hair was very dark and thick, and it was combed straight back over his head. He seemed to have a very good tan and looked normal in every way. So that was the quote. And apparently he was normal, but he was also wearing shiny green trousers and a black coat.
What year was this again? Because I'm just picturing Grease. I'm picturing Danny from Grease, like all the stiff back hair, you know. Trying to be suave and tanned. And
it's 1966.
I'm sure this thing was just copying everyone around him.
That is a big theory, is that because when we get to the end of all these encounters, it is one of those things where it's like, how did John Keel connect all of them? And was it like, did Indrid Cold tell him that he was these three things? Because there are a lot of discrepancies and a lot of differences. But I think one piece that I was gathering is that as the encounters evolved, his appearance changed. Like he almost became better at appearing human. So in the first encounter, his head was a bit bigger, his eyes were spread wider, his smile was off. This encounter, he's almost had a month now. He looks more traditionally human.
I'm also curious, the people who originally reported on that day seeing him by the train tracks, what did they look like? Were those the humans that he got close to and is like trying to steal parts of the appearances of everyone he's surrounded by?
Oh, interesting. It's possible. So this man, this normal looking man, creature, being, starts to communicate with Woody telepathically. It, or he, told Woody to roll down his car window. And while terrified, Woody did it. And this entity communicated that it wanted to talk to Woody and that Woody need not be scared. He knew Woodrow's name. He called him by name, Woodrow Derenberger, without Woody ever telling him what it was. And then this man introduced himself as Cold. Indrid Cold.
I like the name. It's so cool.
I think so too. He told Woody that he was a searcher and that he wished him no harm, only happiness. He went on to share information about where he came from, and he basically asked questions of Woody. He was like, what are those lights over there? And Woody was like, well, that's a city. And I can't remember the name of the local city that was there. And Indrid told Woody that in his, where he's from, they call places like that gatherings. So a city is a gathering. That's where people go and gather.
Oh, interesting.
He then tells Woody that he should report this encounter he is having and experiencing to the police, and that Indrid would come back soon to help confirm the encounter.
For what purpose, too? It's like, what does Indrid Cold want?
That is the whole thing. It's wild. It's giving me a rival.
Oh.
And it is probably a 100-plus page book. The encounters that Woody had, I think Woody contacted Indrid Cold throughout his entire life after this experience. He had multiple encounters. I'm going to share the major ones with you.
Okay.
So despite the horror, there was something in Woody that felt like he could trust this creature.
Mm-hmm.
So Indrid tells Woody he had to go now, but that they would meet again soon. Indrid returned to his ship, closed the door. And Woody noted that as the door was closing, there was another like humanoid figure, a silhouette that he could see help close the door. So Indrid's not alone. They closed the door and the ship rose straight up, making a soft fluttering sound, and was gone. Woody was in complete shock that when he returned home to his wife and his wife saw the look on his face, his wife goes, "Were you in an accident that killed someone?" Like truly, she thought someone had died and Woody was somehow like connected to someone's death. That's how horrified his face was.
His face, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm also so curious so the thought was Indrid's not alone on the ship. I want to know what the other beings look like, because it sounds like Indrid is morphing and trying to become something that can easily communicate without instilling too much fear with humans. What do the other guys on the ship look like?
Well, you might find out.
Oh, okay.
So Woody tells his wife everything that happened, and then as Indrid had instructed him, he decides to report it to the police. And like we were just talking about, a lot of people in these situations are like ignored or like called crazy, just kind of like whatever. But two other people had reported similar encounters on that same highway from that night as well. And then as John Keel did this research into this, he found that actually three people, way more than these two that reported it, actually encountered. So three people encountered Indrid Cold, or different searchers, as Indrid Cold was a searcher, on that same highway from that night as well. It was on November 2nd, 1966. So shortly after Woody had encountered it, a family was driving on the same stretch of road. A mom, son, and daughter had seen the ship right near where Woody had been stopped. So the family stopped their car and watched the ship for 5 whole minutes before it just disappeared.
So they saw it ahead and then they stopped before they interacted with it and just,
mm-hmm.
That's smart.
At this point, it was hovering above the road higher up rather than down below. Later, a young man driving the same stretch of road had the experience of the ship literally hovering over his car, shining a really bright white light over him. And he left as quickly as possible, then called the police. Two other truck drivers were stopped that night, but neither of them wanted to give their names. And the next day, Woody couldn't help but hyperfixate on the encounter. He recalled that the ship was huge. It was 45 to 60 feet long, It was 20 or so feet tall and resembled an old-fashioned kerosene lamp chimney. So kind of the way that it, like, goes, it's, like, smaller on the bottom, goes out, and then in again.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, like, a spaceship or UFO craft that we've seen before.
Yeah.
It was dark gray, had no lights, and the only sound it made was a soft fluttering, like hummingbird wings. Very quickly, people start to learn of this encounter, and Woody was asked to speak of it on WTAP TV in Parkersburg. And by 2:30 p.m. on November 3rd, which is the day after his encounter, he is at the station and is being greeted by basically the amount of people who come to the TV station to interact with Woody and hear his story is wild. There's city police, state police, an Air Force sergeant. Like, there are a lot of big wig people who were like, we need to talk to this man.
Right, which means that they were alerted of enough mm-hmm. activity, or at least of the seriousness of Woody's encounter, that it did seem like something that everyone... Well, yeah, this is just... I love when this stuff happens. But also, I feel like it's just more proof. It's like, if all of these government agencies are also here and military, you know, then
it gets even wilder.
It also means that they don't know much either, because otherwise, wouldn't you think that they would try to be like, it's nothing, and then privately talk to him? But
well, to keep in mind how many people experienced something that night with these searchers or with Indrid Cold.
Right.
Maybe like the New Jersey experience, like they're like, oh, it's nothing. But now here in West Virginia, when so many people are encountering it, and Woody Derenberger had such a intense encounter where they communicated, I think now it's like, oh, you kind of have to get, and maybe the way that it communicated with Woody is a new thing for them, so they do need to know more.
Yes.
I'm gonna play a clip for you.
Okay.
So this is a clip from the interview of Woody on WTAP that next day, so it's literally very fresh on his mind.
Yeah, less than 24 hours later, basically.
You can listen to the entire audio online. We can post that. This is just like a 20-second clip.
Great.
So I'll play the audio for you.
And again, he told me not to be frightened, which I was. I was very frightened. And as far as I can understand, this was all mental. There was no spoken words from him. I knew what he was asking me, but yet he stood there and his mouth did not move. He had a smile on his face. He appeared very courteous and friendly. And after I talked with him a while, he told me he would see me. He said, we will see you again. And he left in his vehicle.
So in this clip, he also says that Indrid tells him they will meet again soon. Well, how soon? Woody did not know. But only 2 days later, he had his second encounter with Indrid Cold.
Oh my gosh. It's also hard because it's like Indrid Cold is obviously not a human. So what is soon to them? Like, do they understand? Like, could it be 50 years? And it feels like the next day to them. 2 days. That's great.
So November 2nd at 7:25 p.m. is when his first encounter happens. November 3rd, he's on the news. He's being interviewed. He's spoken to police. He speaks to all of these like army people.
Yeah. And also, can I just say how incredible that it does feel like everyone's really receptive to what he's saying and they believe him, because so many times.
Well.
Oh. Spoke too soon.
It's sad because these encounters are kind of incredible, but it also did ruin Woody's life because. Anyway, we'll get to that in a second. But
okay.
So now on November 4th, Woody has his second encounter with the man or creature who calls himself Indrid Cold. And in the book, Woody calls him Mr. Cold. So it's very, like, formal. But this time, Woody was not alone. This time, Woody is driving in his truck with a friend in the passenger seat. As they're driving, both men suddenly start to feel, like, a weird tingling in their head. Woody recalls that the first night of their encounter, or his encounter with Indrid Cold, he experienced that same tingling when Indrid began to telepathically communicate with him. So he's driving in the car with a friend. They both start to experience this tingling in their heads. And all of a sudden, Woody hears Indrid's voice inside his head. Apparently, the friend in the passenger seat only experienced the, like, lightheadedness, but...
Oh, so it was like a by proxy...
right
situation for him. He was just in the proximity of the encounter, but it wasn't meant for him clearly because he didn't hear anything out loud.
Right. So Indrid tells Woody that he should slow down and drive carefully. But then he informs Woody that his ship is flying directly high above Woody's truck, which I think is really funny that Indrid is choosing to, like, it's almost like Bluetooth telephone call, you know, like, yeah, while you're in the car. Because also the conversation that is about to occur between the two of them, I'm like, why does this have to happen right now while driving? And also, I think it's ironic that Indrid is telling Woody to drive more carefully, but he's the one who's like telepathically communicating with him and distracting him.
Yeah. He couldn't wait. He was like, I got to use this new walkie-talkie feature on the ship where I can just tap into this guy's brain.
There should be a new law in addition to not texting and driving. There should be no telepathic communication in driving because I feel like that is just as distraction. He starts communicating with Indrid through telepathic communication, and Indrid tells Woody all about where he's from. It's almost like a therapy session that Woody didn't realize he was hosting.
Right. This is so bizarre, which again, it's like, what are Indrid's intentions other than just being seen and having someone to talk to?
Right. I don't understand it. The one thing that was never clear is like, what is the role necessarily of a searcher? What I think it is that a searcher from the planet that Indrid is from, which I'll tell you about in a second, is to search for humans that they could share their message with to hopefully help Earth live out that message, which is very much like Arrival, right? Like the universal language.
Right. And yeah.
So he tells Woody that he's from a planet called Lanulos that was located close to the galaxy Ganymede, and that the planet was practically the same as Earth. There were woods, fields, oceans, streams, and similar animals and plants, but also many different animals and plants.
Hmm.
Their planet has three seasons, not four, and their people have a life expectancy of 125 to 175 Earth years.
So it doesn't feel that different. Like, it does feel like we could develop into that direction.
Well, you'll hear more in a second.
Well, especially with global warming, we might have three seasons soon, too. Winter be gone.
Or we might need to move to Lanulos. But
yeah, pick us up.
Indrid is using a lot of, like, Earth language to help Woody understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So Indrid tells Woody that he's married too. He has a wife whose name is Kimi, and they had two sons. One was 8 and the other one was 11.
So cute. So they're basically babies, because if they live till they're like 175, 8 years old is so, they've got, so, I wonder how quickly they develop too. Like, what is 8?
Right.
I'm picturing an 8-year-old human, but like, is 8 actually like a 6-month-old child?
No, I mean, because it's not that drastic of a difference. Like, our life expectancy, yeah, it's on 125, but people live to 100, you know, like.
But is he human or is he a different species, you know?
I don't know what type of species they are. but I think they're of human origin.
A hybrid.
They might be hybrid. Or they've just evolved because of the landscape that they live on. So Indrid tells Woody all this information and then is like, okay, I gotta go now. Thanks for listening. I'm gonna break communication and I might feel weird for a second. And so he like warns Woody the communication's gonna be broken. Communication is broken. Woody doesn't really feel weird because he feels exhilarated. He's like, what is happening? This is wild.
Also, can I just say, I picture, because it sounds like his planet is so lovely and he just came here to give a message. And obviously they have the power and ability to move either through portals or bend time because they're not even from this galaxy. So
they bend time.
The travel difficulties would be extreme for us and actually impossible in our current moment in time. But it does make me wonder that they had access to like all periods of human existence, but the Indrid Cold only had two movies on DVD. And it was Zoolander and Grease. And that's why he wore what he did. He was like, gotta show up high fashion on planet Earth.
It's a good question. And if we ever meet Indrid Cold, I'm curious what movie he's watching now. And we'll have to show him, like, I don't know, what should we show him? What's our movie that we show him?
Planet of the Apes. I don't know.
I like that that's your choice. I was like thinking Mean Girls.
Oh, that would be such a good one. I know you think that we have these really big problems in the world, but when we're 13, this is really the peak issue.
The biggest problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so Woody's like exhilarated. His friend sitting in the passenger seat, this tingling in his head now goes away. And he's like, what the heck just happened? Woody can hardly explain what happened. And he's also so confused that he's not sure how to tell anyone. So he doesn't report this incident, but he does report it to the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena in Washington, D.C. So on November 3rd, remember, he was on the news. That news segment gets picked up to national news, and it becomes such a sensation. And Woody Derenberger is just like this normal guy in West Virginia. And all of a sudden, people are like camping outside of his home. People are calling him nonstop. His life completely changes. He can hardly go do his job and sell sewing machines because everyone knows his face and everyone knows his connection now to this alien encounter.
I mean, this is reminding me of the Pascagoula alien abduction, where the two people who were abducted, one person's life felt like it was ruined for 20 years and the other person just allowed everyone to think whatever of him, but he just continued to like, there's two different reactions to having that energy. People either double down or they try to run from it because it's extremely uncomfortable and you didn't ask for this.
Yeah. Woody was somewhere in between. And I think in the beginning, he was so confused by it that he was just like, I don't really know what this is. And he truly, ever since that first night of November 2nd, UFOs seemed to follow him. Which was another reason that people kept camping out at his house, because they were hoping to catch sight of UFOs. People would come and like ask him to go UFO sighting hunting with them. Mm-hmm. But it got to the point where men were literally coming to his house with shotguns and sitting in his trees in his backyard to try to shoot a UFO out of the sky. So I think at this point they had two kids, a 7-year-old son, Charles, and a 3-year-old daughter. And these two kids are now, I mean, they're all of their lives are being changed, but their 7-year-old is being bullied at school. Both kids start having terrible nightmares. They're always anxious because there's all these strangers just like parked outside of their house. And it got to a point where Woody and his wife were like, we need to do something. We need to call the police. They called the police, but there was only so much the police could do. They literally had to move multiple times.
Because people just kept finding them.
Yeah. And it completely altered their lives. By 1970, tensions within the family were so fraught that Woody and his wife ended up getting a divorce.
It's terrible. Also, it makes me question the people who are doing this. It's like, after hearing this story, what part of you thinks that you can just easily sneak up on this ship and this person and shoot them?
Right. People don't care about the people. They care about like their own story, right?
Yeah.
So the book goes into a lot more detail about the multitude of encounters that Woody has had, but I'm going to share a couple that I think are pertinent to understanding Indrid Cold. And then also, I do think it's important to note that following the events, Woody was interrogated so heavily. He went through intense investigations. Both, like, there were heads of government that interrogated him, the head of NASA, John Keel, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's, in one of the chapters, he talks about how for 5 days he was interrogated. 5 days straight.
Wow. Well, my question for him, and I don't know if you saw this in the research, but was this mostly a conversation where he was just being told things and accepting them, or was he asking questions in return and getting answers?
No, he was being asked the questions. And he does make
I mean, with him and Indrid Cold. Like, did he have actual answers and intel to share with other people?
Yes.
Or was he just repeating everything Indrid told him? Because it's like, how did they get there? How did they travel there? Like, if I were NASA, I would want those things answered.
Yes. I will answer some of that because, like I said, there's so many encounters and there's a lot more that happens with Woody and Indrid. But basically, the 5-day interrogation that he talks about in the book, Woody recalls that, so all the people who were interrogating him were asking questions, like basically asking every question you're just asking, trying to figure out everything and make sure that Woody was not withholding anything. So when Woody was telling them about the story, Indrid was like, oh, I'm from the planet Lanilos, which is near this galaxy Ganymede. He registered that the people interrogating him knew of Lana Lewis. He picked up on this like weird behavior on the people who were interrogating him. And he was like, I think they know this information already. Like, I don't think this is new information.
This makes me question, what part did they know? Like, did they already have intel from other encounters that had mentioned Lana Lewis? Or was Injured Cold using the words that like we had already associated with certain galaxies and planets? And so maybe that was like recently discovered and named or something. And everyone's like, holy shit.
That's the hard thing about, I mean, all alien encounters is that we don't know what the government knows. We're never going to know what the government knows because they're playing it close to their chest. But what I found interesting is that in Woody's book, so basically these people who were interrogating and interviewing Woody did every test possible to like get him like a clear bill of mental health and like health. Just basically they were trying to make sure this was not a crock of shit. He went through so many tests. He had like a psychiatrist from the government come test him. He passed everything. But for some reason, like in the files, there are certain documents that the government refused to put in the files. So in the book, you can see he has all of the doctor's notes and like documented like medical bills and things that he went through for proving that he was sane in the back of the book. And multiple people who he encountered, who interrogated him or like did medical tests on him, had then had encounters with Injured Cold.
What in the world?
It's almost like they were trying to discredit him, you know? Like they want, and I understand if you're the government, you probably get so many fake reports that you do want to go through all of this effort to make sure you're getting an accurate account.
Well, and maybe it's really scary too if you get so close to the truth and you're realizing that someone else is learning things that are supposed to be top secret. Maybe it's like a big effort to discredit him for that reason.
Right.
Because it's like, oh shit, this isn't something that's just like a random alien abduction or someone communicating with an alien once or twice. Like, this is someone who's getting some legit intel.
Yeah. And to me, it makes sense that like the government gets all this information. They understand that Woody is telling legit stuff, but they almost want to discredit him to the public eye.
Yeah. Woody, trust no one.
Except for Indrid. Okay. So this is the point of the story. And keep in mind, this is only like the second encounter. I mean, it's the most thorough encounter that anyone has had with Injured Cold, but there's like three main ones, considered main ones. And this is beautiful because Woody and Injured become like the best of friends. So
cute.
The third encounter that Woody has with Injured, Woody is coming home late from work. And this is also before he left Mineral Springs. So he's still in West Virginia. He's still married with his kids. He comes home late from work and finds Injured with a friend, Carl with a K, sitting, waiting for him on their back porch.
Is Carl human or is Carl like Injured?
Carl is like Injured. And I'm not sure. I think they both look very similar. I'm not sure, but different. So like similar to how humans are like similar shapes, whatever, but we're all features are different. During this visit, Injured and Carl, and it's a very like philosophical, like let's smoke cigars on the back porch and talk about life conversation.
Right.
Indrid's like, I don't understand the concept of hate. Woody, will you explain it to us? So like Woody tries to explain it and Indrid is like, in our planet, hate doesn't exist. There's only the concept of like love and appreciation and that there's no discrimination. They tell Woody that they're very similar to humans, but have spent more time studying space and learning how to conquer gravity, bend distance, time, and space. And they just swap stories. And it seemed like Indrid was trying to understand Earth and humans while also sharing about his people and his planet. And they end up having this whole conversation where Indrid's like, I really believe that if humans on Earth had the ability to telepathically communicate, all of hate would be gone because then you would understand the feelings and the thoughts and the emotions that everyone is experiencing, and everyone would love one another better and more. And then Indrid tells Woody the origin story of Lanalos and how it became populated.
Ooh!
So this is a legend that exists on the planet Lanalos. As the story goes, there was a spaceship from Earth, apparently, that crash landed on Llanelos. And this is one of those things where it's like, what time period is it? Because clearly, like, we today on Earth don't have the ability to space travel that far. So is it something that happens so far in the future, but when it travels through space, it ends up like going back in time?
Yeah. Or, I mean, did it even happen like a few thousand years ago or however long ago? And then something happens where we reset as a planet.
The Big Bang.
I don't know. Yeah.
Anyway, so the spacecraft from Earth apparently crash landed on Llanelos and the spaceship broke. And all of the men and women who were on the ship tried to repair the ship. They worked for years and years and eventually became so angered with one another that they couldn't fix it, that they all gave up and they started like to spread out and start their own civilizations. And they were all like, I'm going to start like a society over here and I'm going to start a society over here. But because of that, they ended up isolating themselves so much. And one day, one of these men who had gone off by himself was feeling so lonely and so sad and feeling silly about how they all split up and left that ship unattended and basically decided to go on their own ways. And he noticed that he could hear someone else's thoughts, but they were echoing his own thoughts. And they were the thoughts of another man who had gone and done, like, who had split off from the ship, who was also just as lonely and just as sad and feeling just as isolated. And it brought all these people back together. And they realized that their sadness and loneliness allowed them to open up a telepathic communication with one another. And they were able to perfect this telepathy. And there's a whole lot of information in the book about how it works. And it's not like I can just read your mind no matter what, whenever. It's like an allow one another to read each other's minds.
Right, yeah. Because we don't want this to be like a Twilight vampire situation where, you know, your dirty little random secret thoughts are being exposed.
Right. But then also, if everyone has access to each other's secret thoughts, then we won't feel as embarrassed about our secret thoughts, right? Because then you realize you're not alone and everyone else has them too. Anyway, so because of this, it brought this community back together. And they decided to form one people. And Llanelos then began to thrive and it built like this whole Earth, like, you know, Earth version on the planet. And also in the book, if you would like, Indrid did describe in detail like the government structure of Llanelos and all of that. But I didn't want to get too much into that because I wanted to focus on Indrid and Indrid Cold. Okay, so then at the end of this third encounter, when they're all like pontificating life on Earth and Llanelos, Indrid and Carl are, I think it's like 2 a.m. And they're like, okay, like, I think it's time to call it a night. We're going to head back to our ship. And Indrid goes, Woody, would you like to come see our ship?
What an honor. Yes, of course I would.
And Woody was a little too nervous. So he said no this time.
No, Woody.
But 2 days later, when Woody returns home late from work, he finds Indrid and Carl again waiting for him. And this time, at the end of their conversation, when Indrid invites him on the ship, Woody says yes.
Also, is Woody's family, are they also seeing these guys? Like, are they meeting them?
So they were encountering, I don't think to the same extent, but they were having experiences. I think his kids were a bit afraid of everything because they were so young.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, these guys, they're out until 2 a.m. on the porch. Like, is everyone else just inside?
Yeah, I think everyone else is inside. And I think all of these conversations are happening telepathically. So no one else can hear it.
They're just sitting there silently.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So Woody is invited onto the ship. And Indrid and Carl show him around the entire thing. Again, if you want more details of the ship, you can. But this story is my favorite. So it's kind of like they're wrapping up. I think there was one part of the ship that Woody was not allowed to see. But they take him to this one room. And Woody steps inside by himself and he's like looking around and he sees this like panel with a bunch of lights and he like goes to look at the lights and all of a sudden the door slams shut behind him and he's trapped in this room and he's freaking out. He's panicking. He's like, oh my gosh, am I a fool? Did I just get conned? Did Indrid and Carl like butter me up and like this was all part of their plan to lure me in and trap me?
Yeah, gain his trust and then abduct him.
And so he starts like banging. He's like, please, like, open the door, open the door. And Indrid and Carl immediately open the door. And they're kind of looking at him like, whoa, what's going on, Woody? And Woody goes, oh, you're going to take me whether I want it or not. And Indrid starts laughing. And he goes, I mean, no, not unless you want me to.
Well, because also they had all the opportunity and all the power to take him before. So why put in all that effort? Like, that would just be cruel to put in all that effort to, like, gain his trust and stuff just to do what they could have done from the get-go.
But it is scary. I mean, the door being slammed shut. Yeah. So Woody goes, like, why did you close the door on me? And Indrid's like, I didn't shut it, Woody. You did. And Woody's like, no, I didn't. And Indrid says, touch that blue plate again. Woody does, and the door slams shut.
Oh, my gosh. It's like when you try to lean against a wall and you turn the light switch off on accident.
He did it to himself. And Woody. When he has this realization, Woody, Indrid, and Carl all burst into laughter. Like, the three of them are cackling.
The best,
like,
buds.
BFFs, having a great time. In future encounters, Indrid took Woody on flights. They literally got in the ship and flew. Apparently, they took him to visit the Amazon. They also, this is interesting, there were a bunch of places where, and it goes into more detail in the book, but they took him to, like, over European cities. And the next day, Woody would see in the news, or, like, I don't know how he would find this information, but there would be reports of UFOs in those cities that he was taken with Indrid in the ship.
And it was just Woody and his buddies going for a cruise.
Literally.
Oh, my God. That's incredible. Oh, man. Did they ever leave Earth?
He even goes to the planet Lanilos.
There we go. How long did it take? What was the journey like? How did they get there? Where did they go? Was he conscious the whole time? I have so many questions.
I think it happens so quickly. I think they really are able to bend time and space. Like, in my understanding of it, it's like a day trip. Like, it's not, he's not gone for months and months.
That is so wild.
There's a whole chapter in the book where he goes in detail about, like, the description of what Lanilos looks like. But he basically talks about how he eats food there. They also went to, there's like a docking station apparently on the surface of the, or in the, like, moon somewhere. He went to Saturn, so many other things. And then in May of 1967, so remember, all of this started in November of 1966. So May of 1967, he goes to Lanilos again. And this time he meets Indra's wife and children.
Oh my God.
So in this span, Indrid and his wife Kimi had actually had a daughter. So now there's this newborn baby here at the house, and Woody is meeting all of them.
This is a friendship. Like, they're just friends.
They're going friends. And
visiting his buddy.
Yes. So throughout the years, Woody felt a desire to, like, he truly, because of everything that was happening on Earth in Woody's life, because people, like, didn't, you know, his own human Earth life was kind of being torn apart. Him and his wife were having trouble. His job was suffering. He had to file for bankruptcy. Like, his human life was not going well. He had a desire to move to Lanilos, and he even, like, asked Indrid if he could come. And Indrid ultimately was like, our purpose was to share our message with you, to try to help you have, like, spread it on Earth. And Woody raised his kids, like, tried to raise his kids with this, like, one love, no discrimination, empathetic viewpoint. But it was really hard for him because he was struggling quite a lot in his life. And I think he just wanted to be accepted. And when he went to Lanilos, he felt what he wanted, you know? So it was this desire to go there. But
I do wonder if there was ever conversation in Lanilos or on Lanilos about basically abducting is not the right word, because I think it would still, they're a type of people that they would want volunteers, but, like, to come to Earth and be like, we'll take a quarter of the population and bring them to Lanilos for some time to learn our ways and, like, have that love. Basically, like, can you have an internship on Lanilos? And they just, like, do it, and eventually they grab everyone and put us all back on Earth, and then we all, like, that solves everything.
Like, instead of going to college, we go to Lanilos.
Yeah. Everyone goes to Lanilos.
I feel like everyone should spend, like, their first 5 years of life in Lanilos.
I feel like it would make sense because then it's like eventually the entire population of Earth will have either been to Lanelos or raised by someone who's been to Lanelos. And so it will just be, you know, that's peace on Earth.
We are Lanelos now. Oh, now I want to go to Lanelos.
Right? Where's the program?
Indrid, take me.
Indrid, we have a pitch for you.
Okay, so basically that is Woody, and there's more encounters that Woody has with Indrid, but that is the in summation, Woody's experience, Woody Derenberger's. And so now I'm sure you're wondering, what the heck does this have to do with Mothman? What does this have to do with the first encounter and John Keel? Well, these are very good questions. I do want to get back into that, but first, there is an entire chapter in Woody Derenberger's book that is called Funny Things. And it is just funny encounters that he had with Indrid, with the people of Lanelos, or people on Earth regarding his experiences on Lanelos.
So it's nothing that really pushes the narrative forward that Indrid was trying to create, but it's just like notable, funny.
Funny things. Yeah.
Anecdotes.
So I'm going to read one of the encounters because I just think it's silly. And then I am going to read basically all of them on the... There's an episode on Patreon that I'm doing all about alien inventions, and I'm just going to, like, read all of the rest of them on that
okay,
episode.
Okay, I love this.
So this is an example of how rumors and things get started and how people get discredited. And so Woody's story and his interaction with Indrid Cold and the people of Lanelos became national news. And somehow a rumor began that on the planet Lanelos, men got pregnant, not women. And somehow that evolved into people thinking that Woody was pregnant. He would get calls. He would get letters. He would have people show up at his door asking him about his pregnancy.
When he was at Lanelos, like when he was on that planet or on planet Earth.
That he basically was impregnated when he was on Lanelos and came back to Earth and was pregnant and would deliver a baby.
Okay, okay.
So for the most part, Woody would be like, where are you getting this information from? This is not true. I am not pregnant. That is not the case. Women have children. It's the same. But there was one time he was like at a grocery store and a woman kind of like comes up to him very bashfully. And she's like, I have a question, but I'm kind of embarrassed to ask it. And he's like, no, like, please ask it. And so she goes, is it really true that you're pregnant? And Woody decides to say, yes, ma'am. She's like, you're kidding. How will it be delivered? And he says, well, I don't know. They just told me that when it's time, they would take me to Lanelos for delivery. And he truly played off this whole conversation, never told her he was kidding. She left fully believing he was pregnant and would be taken to Lanelos to have a baby.
If you get asked so many times, I feel like you do just end up, you're like, whatever, right. I'm just going to fuck with a few people here.
But like I said, this experience did not make life easy for Woody. There are a lot of critics, a lot of interrogations, and a lot of people who even made death threats to him and his family.
Horrifying.
John Keel seemed to be the one man with an interest of trying to understand rather than prove, criticize, or disprove. It was more of like a, let's learn about this information and figure it out. And so together, John Keel and Woody Derenberger actually found other people who had said that they had been to Lanelos. They went around, they would interview these people to try to understand. And there was one man who had said he had been to the planet where Mr. Cold came from, and he could detail things about the ship and about the planet that Woody had never told anyone. So there were some encounters that they had with other people who they're like, oh, it's very possible there are other searchers out there, because Indrid Cold is one of many. Mm-hmm. That are befriending other humans and taking them to their planet.
Yeah.
But Keel was very curious about the evolution of Indrid Cold and, again, his connection to Mothman, because simultaneously he's learning about all these Mothman things, and this is all happening mm-hmm. within the time frame of October 1966 to December of 1967 when the bridge collapses. So as he's having these encounters, he gets in contact with Indrid Cold, who starts to tell him about a tragedy that's going to occur. And he's kind of giving him these warnings.
Yeah.
There was one moment where Indrid Cold telepathically is like, to prove that he could communicate telepathically and like read people's minds, I think John Keel goes like, what's in my pocket? And he's able to like Indrid Cold is able to say exactly what's in his pocket and answer all of these things that John Keel has never told people. But so this is how it starts to get connected to Mothman. And it seems like his appearance is transitioning, kind of like we said with like the first encounter in New Jersey. He looks different. And with Woody Derenberger, he's a little bit more normal. His smile is more human in appearance. And then more and more theories of Indrid Cold start to come about. There is a third sighting of Indrid Cold that occurred in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, which is the same place as the Mothman sightings. And there is a family called the Lilly family. And they were experiencing what they thought was a poltergeist spirit. There were a lot of lights turning on and off. Things would move. And the youngest daughter, Linda, started to see a man with broad shoulders and a grinning face standing over her bed, staring at her. I have no idea how John Keel pieced it together that this encounter that the Lilly family was experiencing was Indrid Cold or a person from Lanelos.
Mm-hmm.
But he did. And I don't know if that's because Indrid Cold told him that. Or what?
It makes me question, are all of the like grinning man encounters and stories, are right. they people from Lanelos?
Well, this brings up a bigger question because it's like these three encounters that I've shared, the New Jersey, the Woody Derenberger, and the Lilly family are considered the main three encounters with Indrid Cold. Woody Derenberger's is obviously the most elaborate and the most experiences that have occurred with Indrid Cold. But mm-hmm. there are a lot more stories from all over the world with seemingly insignificant details that John Keel has kind of put together to connect to Indrid Cold. But there's also this like theory that perhaps they've been on our planet for forever and have been visiting. If time is not continuous, if we don't understand it, that they've actually been visiting us and communicating with us in these ways for a really long time. We've been talking recently about how the Fae have kind of been confused with aliens and they have very similar attributes. And over time, what used to be considered a Fae encounter is now called an alien encounter. Are they one and the same? It is very confusing, very hard to tell.
Right. And are aliens actually us from the future? Like there's so many different theories. It's not just it's so alien confusing. Creature from another planet anymore.
Right. So John Keel actually, when he was doing this research, found a book written by a man in 1866. This is 100 years before the Indrid Cold encounters with mm-hmm. Woody Derenberger and everyone. 1866, a man named William Denton from Massachusetts wrote a book all about his own encounters. And it is almost a mirror image of everything that Woody Derenberger experienced 100 years later.
Stop. I got chills again, like all over my body.
I know. And then Woody Derenberger's first experience happens on November 2nd, 1966. I think it's like a month prior to this, a group of people in Mexico were contacted by an alien or an alien species and were claimed to be taken to a place in the Ganymede Galaxy. Woody had never heard of this encounter. So it's another like Lanelos is in the Ganymede Galaxy. Are there multiple Lanelos searchers all over the world taking people to their planet? Kind of like you're saying, Corinne.
I feel like they need to take more of us because this is frustrating to hear that it's been happening for hundreds of years, if not more. And mm-hmm. it doesn't feel like we've had much growth. It feels like all of the things that you would think would have been corrected over time, like history just repeats itself and in a different way. And we're still, it kind of feels like we're still where we were.
But also think about it. Lanelos has no obligation to do this for us. It's not their job to teach us to be better people. It sounds like they've allocated a small amount of searchers. It's hard. I want to say people, but they're not people. I guess they're searchers to go to Earth to try to help with mm-hmm. this mission, but it's not their priority. It's not their only thing. They are also living their own lives, and who knows what That's else true. Is going on their planet.
Right. And even if we think about our own planet, if we think about like people who work with energy and, you know, Reiki and all of these things that we're like amazed by them being able mm-hmm. to tap into it, it's still so few and far between when you find those people. It's not like everyone's like, yes, let's go in this direction and dedicate ourselves towards this type of future of understanding. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. I get it. I still want
it. But you want it.
Yeah.
I want it. So, Indrid Cold became the name of this being in lore and legend on Earth. But Indrid Cold mm-hmm. is one individual from Lanilos. And I think a lot of these encounters that are existing all over the place aren't just Indrid, and that there are many other searchers who are responsible for these encounters.
Yeah.
Over time, people have theorized that their presence is not negative, but that they're trying to impart their knowledge. And then some people are like, are they trying to actually help us? It's still very unclear how exactly they're connected to Mothman, but the only connection that I am able to draw is that Indrid Cold was communicating to John Keel the warning of something happening, and the bridge in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, collapsed on the day that Indrid Cold warned of, like, the blackout. So maybe he was just miscommunicating or misunderstanding the Mothman sightings. I don't necessarily know.
Right. It's still like, well, who is Mothman to the people of Lanilos? Like, how do they understand right. this being, this creature?
I don't know. I also haven't read Mothman Prophecies, so it might get into more detail of that in there.
Hmm.
But there are some conspiracies. And there's a theory that Indrid Cold is actually a real human who works with some spies. And okay, this is the conspiracy that I honestly, even if you gave me a tinfoil hat, it would take me a really long time to get on board with it.
Yeah.
There are three. So there's Indrid Cold, there's Carl, and there's like one other being that I think Woody encountered, or people who have encountered Indrid Cold type of beings. And there's like this massive conspiracy that like Indrid Cold is actually this other person who spent years at like the Pentagon, and then like that one of the other people is actually like an old Nazi who was brought to the US and like lived a different life. And anyway, I could not. It's like a blip in the back of the pages of the Woody Derenberger book. So I was like, yeah. I don't even want to venture into this yet because I don't know that I have the capacity and there's no room in this episode. So there are a lot of conspiracies. My main takeaway or my main belief is that Indrid Cold is a being from the planet Lanilos who has come here to Earth along with many other searchers. I don't know how many, but he's not the only one, and has tried to communicate with humans to impart upon them their knowledge of acceptance and of love. And that they're trying to help us.
I am curious too, because so it sounds like there was, whether it was Indrid or another searcher who had basically abducted or like told all of the things, similar things to that group in Mexico. It sounds like they were trying to adapt and being like, okay, well, when we have this communication with one person, it doesn't always hit. It doesn't always mm-hmm. do anything because then people, they go against this one person. So let's try it again with a group and maybe people will believe in the group. And so I am right. curious about like how people responded to the group. It's just one of those things where it's like, will we never truly accept what is in front of us? Because it just, it alters our reality. And so even if there's 500 people who experience something all at once, because you yourself didn't, there's so many people like that who will be like, well, I don't believe that. I don't want to think about that. Those people are making this up.
I mean, think about it today. This is my only comparison I can do. For the longest time, people thought Earth was flat. When we finally discovered it is not, it was a very, very long process for people to believe that it was round. And even to this day, there are flat earthers. So like, even if we had scientific proof of the existence of people from Lanilos, if every single person could see them, mm-hmm. I guarantee there would still be people who didn't believe it.
Right. It's kind of like crop circles. Like, we grew up with the mystery of crop circles. Mm-hmm. I really want to do an episode on it. I will one day. But
you should.
In reality, there's like two guys who were responsible for almost all of the crop circles.
All of them. I know.
It was a prank, but we all fell for it.
I'm just going to conclude this episode with a couple sentiments. So, sadly, Woody's encounter did kind of ruin his life in some regards. He went into bankruptcy. People refused to believe him. And Men in Black apparently harassed him. So I think it was to discredit him a little bit. And he died in 1990 at 74 years old. His daughter ended up publishing his book for him. So again, if you want to read it, I highly recommend it. It is also a really fun quick read. It is called Visitors from Llanelos, My Contact with Indrid Cold by Woody Derenberger. And there are a lot of documents provided in the appendix of Woody's book that detail his clean bill of health and some pieces of information that government agencies chose not to include in their files, including there's the universal alphabet or something like that. And if you want to learn more about those wild conspiracies, you are welcome. It's also in the appendix. Oh, intergalactic alphabet.
Whoa. I'm going to memorize that. Kind of looks like webdings.
It is a little bit. Anyway, that is the story of Indrid Cold. It is very confusing. It is very complicated. I don't fully understand how he's connected to Mothman, who Mothman is to the people of Llanelos. Mm-hmm. But it does seem like there is a connection. And it does seem like the people of Llanelos very much have been present here on Earth for many years.
Right. And I feel like we have so much access to what happens here in America and what's written down in America. And I do wonder if there's another Indrid Cold in some other cultures that we just haven't heard about. You know, like it hasn't been connected to this
right
yet.
Especially the fact that Indrid Cold communicated with Woody in a way that Woody would understand. Which mm-hmm. means that these searchers from Llanelos have the ability to communicate with whoever they're speaking with in a way that will help them process and understand it. Right. So if they're in a different society, different civilization that maybe views things differently, their interpretation of it and their retelling of it might seem different from the Woody Derenberger experience based on the way they live their lives.
At the time of recording this, I'm only like 50 pages into ACOTAR, but I will say that the way Llanelos is described, I know that they're like, it's similar to Earth and blah, blah, blah. But I do picture it as this like perfect
way more place. Lush and beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. And so I do picture like those rolling green hills and it's always like, you know, plants are always budding and flowering and it's perfect and lovely and beautiful.
But that's in spring. Isn't like in ACOTAR, there's like every land has like a different season. It's not like each land.
Well, I don't know that yet because I'm only 50 pages in. We just got there.
Oh, but you did get there. Okay.
Yeah. So that's my only perspective. But I do think Indrid's children are probably going to have the best life ever. Sounds like everyone there does.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if they've taken over the family business and if any of them are searchers now.
I'm curious too. On this planet, because it sounds like they all have jobs or some sort of government structure. There's a lot of things that, you know, starting out as humans, they've kind of taken into their own culture as they've developed over time. But I am curious if there are any things that they don't like. You know, they seem so understanding, but it's like, what's the drama on Llanelos? What's the job nobody wants? Is there one person where they're all like, oh my God, that's the one kind of like outcast of Llanelos?
Interesting.
What are they like?
See, it's so sad because that is such our human perspective. But what if like there truly is a place where
it's just
that
perfect.
Is not even a concept? It could be imperfect in other ways. Like they could have issues that they need to deal with, but it's not at the expense of another person.
But I want to know what those issues are, you know? And like, do they look at them as a perspective of like, is there any sense of dread where it's like, oh, this is a problem that we haven't fixed? Or is it just so matter of fact that there's no emotion? Because there has to be some sort of like, oh, God, I don't know.
Because that's our human way of processing, but we don't know.
Yeah, but if it's all love and rainbows and butterflies, do you even experience it as being love and rainbows and butterflies if you never have the other emotions?
Well, I don't think it's love, rainbows, and butterflies. I think it's just like understanding.
So can't they understand that they don't like something? What do they? I need to know what they don't like. Are they allergic to anything? Like, do you have allergies? That's a question. Because I wouldn't like that.
Oh, that's a good question. I bet there's allergies. I bet there's allergies. Okay, so I will say, if any of you do come in contact with people from Llanelos and you are introduced to someone named Conrad Cold, Connor Cold, or Camila Cold, those are the kids of Indrid Cold.
Ooh, I do like the name Camila. Might steal that if I have a girl. Named after Indrid's kids.
It's spelled K-I-M-I-L-A because Indrid's wife's name was Kimi. So it's Camila.
Camila. So cute. Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm just fascinated with Lanolos now.
You should read the book. I highly recommend it. It's a really fun read.
I will. I also feel like so many other planets that we hear of alien species or just like other galaxies and planets, I feel like they all have really cool, funky names. Do they think the Earth is a really cool, funky name? Like, do they think we have a cool name? The Milky Way galaxy? Like, do they think that's cool? Or are they like, wow, they're bad at naming things?
Well, it's also interesting because Ganymede galaxy is the name that we've given it. Like, the fact that they honor that as well. Do they? Or do they have a different name for it? And do they have a different name for Earth? Or do they call it Earth because we call it Earth?
Well, I guess it's like if we think about planet Earth as it is today, like there are certain countries that we as English speakers call a certain name, but it's not that in their own country.
That's true. Which is so dumb if you think about it. Why do we have an English word for a name of a place?
Yeah, the place should be the place. Like, let's all just learn how to pronounce the places until we get to New Zealand. And then it's real tough.
What is it in their language?
Oh my gosh, the Maori language is so interesting. It'll be like 15 syllables long. I struggled while I was there, but I freaking love that culture so much.
I've never been. I would love to go.
If I haven't already lived a life as a Maori person, then I hope in my next life I get to.
Okay, I hope so too. Or would you rather that or Lanolos?
They're so similar. Either. I want both, okay. So, and I think I'll live a few more lives. Whichever one comes first, I'm down.
Okay. You won't be picky.
Okay. I have a short one, but I'm actually glad that I picked this email because it does remind me of like the very first part of this episode that you shared. Okay. Because this is called Encounter with Men in Black.
Oh.
Hello, guys. My name is Bren. And since I've talked to you guys once before back on your Discord server after you guys got done with your Campfire Stories live stream, I do remember telling you guys about my alien abduction stories and alien encounters, but that was way back in 2021. This happened back in my small town that I still live in, somewhere in Texas. I was mostly aware of seeing a lot of these UFO activities back in this town because it wasn't out of the normal to see UFOs randomly show up once in a blue moon, but things were starting to get really, really bad when I was still a teenager, and a lot of supernatural stuff would only happen around me and no one else. So a few months later on, I was experiencing an alien abduction every once in a while, and it was a really horrifying experience. I would wake up the next day with physical implants on my thumb after seeing what had happened to me. That's so wild, too, because it, like, we've talked about like the theory of abductions actually being your astral body, but there's a physical mark here. It might feel like you were abducted in a dream here, but...
But it physically happened.
This is where things get even weirder. Since one morning, I remember waking up after hearing the doorbell go off at my house. So I get up from my bed and I head to the kitchen, and there I look outside of the window. I saw this old-fashioned black car that looked like maybe it was from the 90s or the 80s. It was pretty old, but it did look very clean. And I remember opening the door and there were these two men standing outside. They were very emotionless and had straight, serious faces. And they were wearing black and white suits and black hats. They wanted me to come with them since I needed to talk to them alone. And I had a feeling that this would happen to me, that someone would show up and ask me questions about all of the UFO activities that I was experiencing. I did go with them. And after I got done talking with them, they told me not to tell anyone what I saw or what they told me.
Bren, why are you telling us?
Bren, I think this is risky business. So after that day, I did stay quiet about it. But I do have a few more stories and I can share those with you guys.
Yes, please.
From Bren. Bren is telling us everything and nothing all at once. It's like,
I know.
We don't actually get the details.
I get that. That's scary.
We just know that Bren was abducted, had proof, Men in Black came.
I feel like we need to meet in person so Bren doesn't have to like write it all down.
I know. I'm so curious.
Bren, tell us your small town. We'll be there. We'll show up as ladies in white and we'll defeat the Men in Black.
That would be so interesting. I feel like that would really confuse them maybe enough. But like, maybe they would think we're ghosts and they would be like, oh, don't worry about those people. They've already passed on. And then we get to listen in the whole time.
They already know what's going on.
Sorry, can you repeat that? I didn't hear that. Can you put subtitles on?
There was a piece in the Woody Derenberger book that talks about how, I guess, Indrid Cold had indicated a different type of alien species that were responsible for like the Betty and Barney Hill abduction and some of the more like probing like abductions that are different from.
Yeah, some of the ones that are really scary.
Right. And there's not a ton of detail, but it does sound like these encounters that Brent is having are more of the probing, non-Lanalos kind encounters.
Right. Like Brent has what I can only presume is like a tracker of some kind, either on them or like it's measuring something. I don't know.
Also, how many times has Brent woken up feeling like they've been abducted?
Right. And how big of a hotspot for alien activity is this?
Right.
Because it's somewhere in Texas. Texas is freaking massive. So it's like it could be anywhere. But how much is it kind of on the Arizona, New Mexico side of Texas?
We should phone a friend, as in Bren.
Bren, let us know. We need more details. We understand the Men in Black told you not to tell, but
we need to know.
Could you?
Can you?
What would happen? What did they say would happen if you did tell? Can you take the risk?
Yeah. Are you willing? Stay tuned, folks. We'll find out.
Well, what a fascinating story. I'd never heard of Injured Cold.
Me neither, and I had no idea it was so alien heavy, but I'm here for it. I loved it.
I love this too. I've never said that I want to be abducted by aliens, and I stand by that, but Injured is some sort of other hybrid situation, and I would love to spend some time in my backyard with Injured.
Right. It sounds like he loves a good backyard chat, so maybe that's possible.
And then maybe one day I'll get to go to Lanalos. I'll pick you up on the way. And if it happens for you, Sabrina, you need to pick me up on the way.
Of course. Of course.
Okay.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. If you have any encounters with Injured Cold or know anything else about Injured Cold and Mothman or anything paranormal, really, please email it to us at twogirlsoneghostpodcast@gmail.com. If you would like episodes 1 week early and ad-free, and if you would like bonus episodes every month and campfire stories, join us on Patreon. It's one tier for $5 a month, and you get access to all of that and so much more.
You can also rate and review on wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, wherever.
And follow us on social media. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to our editor, Jamie, who edits our video and our audio. We're so grateful for you. And thank you to all of you for listening.
And we will see you on the other side.
Very spooky.